Hi, I'm Bob Bazans, and I'm an alcoholic. Sober through the grace of God in AA since the 10th of December, 1967, and for that I'm very grateful. I don't know why the hell Matt had to talk about Sandy during the time he introduced me. That seemed kind of inappropriate. I don't know whether... I want to thank Dick and whoever else was involved with the opportunity for Linda and I to be here this weekend. This is very nice, and it is kind of a privilege. And it's interesting that this format, as opposed to people just giving their story, I think you get something different out of each of us, and I think that's a kind of new genre that has been good. My life is in pretty good shape, but just before I came here, I made a tragic mistake, and... I forgot our wedding anniversary. Now, in fairness to me, we were on this wonderful trip together, my wife and I, for 7 days, which counted for nothing the day I forgot our wedding anniversary. And I thought it was the 1st of December, and it turned out to be the 2nd. And there's a few other things, like she brought me a card down at the office, and I didn't pay enough attention to the card. And so what I would like everybody to do is wish Linda a happy 42nd anniversary. The other thing she hates is being the center of attention, so I'll probably have to deal with that later, so we will do that. I love the fabric that each individual contributed to on the way through. Ivester is maybe the strongest man I know in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think his experience in drinking and the conversion that happened to him when he came through it just has a strength and a power to it that is just seeps into everything that he does. And there's a strength that is almost intimidating in the I don't know. It's just powerful, and I enjoy every interaction that I have with it. I love Ralph's presentation this morning, and that was very cool. And I love Michael, and that was... So we're all kind of knitting together our contribution. I'm going to talk about 5, 6, and 7. I have been sober almost 42 years. In 4 days or 5 days, I will be sober that long. And I think sometimes, so I just want to say in context, I mean, some of what I'm going to be sharing, if you're sitting out in the audience with 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years, I didn't have what I have today when I was sober 3 years. When we give our talks, we often tell you how we have had serious issues in our lives and we resolve them. But you never got to see me curled in the fetal position, sucking my thumb under my desk during the worst of the time that I was going through the collapse of my business or the illness of our son or whatever issue happened to be addressing it. We don't, but I think sometimes we might give the impression that, oh, this huge problem came up and we examined our program, grabbed it by the throat, and managed it. And usually it happens over a significant process. We go through the same emotional tumult that all of you go through in your lives. We have the same preferences. You know, we would prefer not to have the issues and problems that we have in our life. As AA has grown, one of the things that has happened to us is we have become a little bit more formal, and there is a movement in every organization towards orthodoxy. And so if you go, you know, there's probably more teaching on the steps today. And that was a distinction that Tom talked about in his talk, is he said he's not interested in, you know, kind of eloquent, somewhat complicated. I got a little intimidated because I'll probably be more complicated than Tom was. Sharing about the steps. He's interested in putting the steps into action in his life and being able to communicate that and transfer it to another person in such a way that that person has an opportunity to have the same change and transformation happen in their lives that Tom happened in his. And that's what our book is about, and it's what our book is for. Almost all of us are somewhat familiar with, you know, in certain religions they use the Bible somewhat harshly and very literally. And we are moving, maybe not quite in that direction, but we're moving somewhat in that direction. And Ralph said in words that I thought were very appropriate, that the book does not contain recovery. It is a signpost. It is a menu. It is the description of the process that we have to go through to reach the relationship with the God of our understanding and to have the change happen in our lives. It is our text. It is our description. And it is the instruction that we are to take. But it is not God. It does not contain God. It does not contain the recovery in itself. We have to put it into our hearts and into our beings and have the change happen to us. It is the donkey that brings us to the door, but we have to dismount the donkey and knock on the door and open the door and have the experience ourselves to go do that. And sometimes if I get so complicated, I want to make clear that I think sometimes some of us give presentations on the steps that are so detailed that you almost feel like you have to have a master's degree to do the steps. I'm going to be talking about step 5, 6, and 7 in the big book. There are 4.5 pages, and they are pretty important steps in our fellowship. I'm going to be talking about them kind of in two ways. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 23 years old. I was a young guy. I started drinking when I was 13 years old. I drank as often, as much as I could in a society, in a school that we drank a lot. Of my 5 closest friends in high school, 4 are in AA, 1's in Al-Anon. We drank a lot in high school. Car accidents, arrests, those sorts of issues. I went away to school. I walked out of Notre Dame in the middle of my senior year. I was diagnosed an alcoholic when I was 19. I got out of the Army. I was supposed to be commissioned as an officer in the Army, and I got released for alcoholism. I came home. I finished school. Had the last year of my drinking, and my father and my psychiatrist had been trying to get me to Alcoholics Anonymous or to treatment. And finally, one day, I woke up after drinking for 3 or 4 days and in a pretty significant blackout during a wedding of one of my friends, I had my moment of truth. I guess I got tired of hugging the toilet in the morning and living my life the way I lived it, and I called out, and I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and a guy from Intergroup sent 2 men out to talk to me at a cafe. And for the first time in my young life, with all the help that my family had given me, which is enormous, I talked to another person who had a drinking problem. I talked to experts, judges, priests, ministers, bishops, psychiatrists, psychologists. I'd never talked to another person, and in a matter of an hour and a half, what Tom was talking about, they won my confidence, and that got me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, which started a love affair which has sustained me these 42 years. I have the same sponsor that I got the first night I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. He is 90 years old. He is 55 years sober and still going to meetings. He was a mailman. He was a 12-step champion of the Uptown group of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a real workhorse. And he was, I think if Warren were here, you would not be impressed with him as an expert on the big book. But I assure you that if you followed him around your life, he was my big book. He was an example of me in his marriage. He was an example of me in his home. He was an example of me in his fathering. He was an example of me primarily as in his activity in Alcoholics Anonymous. He took me through the steps. We were not very formal in those days. I remember I went to him about the first 3 steps, and I said, I want to take the first 3 steps, but I don't know how. And he more or less told me that I could take the first 3 steps sitting in the chair that I was in talking to him about Alcoholics Anonymous. He gave me the Gettysburg Address of AA in my first month of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, told me that it was a disease. Did not know that. He told me it was physical, mental, and spiritual. I did not know that. He told me that once we crossed the line from problem drinking into alcoholism, our alcoholism affected us all the time when I was drinking and when I was not drinking. The idea that my disease could affect me when I was not physically using was an idea that stretched my imagination. I didn't understand how that was powerful, because I thought what everybody else was telling me in my misunderstanding was that if I wouldn't drink, my life would clear up. And I tried not drinking a number of times, and my life didn't clear up, and that was kind of confusing to me. I thought I had a built-in failure mechanism. He explained to me that the program was not about abstinence. It was about sobriety, and there was a different quality to sobriety than there was in abstinence, and that included participation in Alcoholics Anonymous and putting the steps in action in your life. He said, I don't think you'd be going, you know, I don't think if you had you not taken step one that you'd still be after these 4 or 5 months attending 6 or 7 meetings a week. He said, I told you when you got here that you would come into Alcoholics Anonymous and you diagnosed yourself as an alcoholic. Do you think you've done that? And I said, yeah, I think I have. He said, once in a while I get a little squirrely thinking I'm pretty young, but I said, mostly I fully identify with the men and I fully identify with what I read in the book. And he said, you seem, because of your activity in Alcoholics Anonymous, to believe that there's a power greater than yourself, at least in the group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, I know with your Catholic background, I think you have a belief in a higher power. Is that so? I said, yes. And he said, do you believe that a higher power has the power to restore you to sanity? I said, yes, I do. And then we talked about the third step. And he said, I think you've made the decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God just by looking at the activity that you're going through. And it was a great comfort to me. And it allowed me, now that's not very fancy. And if we really got into some of the details, people would say that I missed some of the things that went on in that. But I didn't feel like I missed anything. And I started in the process of doing my first four step. My first four step was not very complete. I read the big book. I read the 12 and 12. I didn't follow the outline very well. In those days, it seemed like you kind of used your sponsor when you were in 8 and 9 and you used your sponsor when you were doing step 4. The other steps, in our area, all our meetings were closed-step discussion groups. All we talk about, to this day, I go to five meetings a week. Three of those meetings are closed-step discussion meetings. We just, you know, Ralph gets up and he gives 5 or 10 minutes on the step, and when we break up into, you know, our group's 200 people, so we break up into 15 different rooms and we complete the conversation on the step. So we get a lot of discussion about that. But my first, fourth, and subsequently the fifth step was a recitation of the worst things that I had done in my life. It was in the form of a general confession, which the book talks about if you're Catholic, that might be a direction that you take. And while it wasn't sufficient in context, I experienced a sense of forgiveness that was powerfully important to me in my life. I felt like I had cleansed myself of the secrets in my life, and I felt that I wouldn't have gone through that process if I really hadn't had an intention to complete the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and move my life in a different direction. I subsequently have probably taken 15 or 20 fourth and fifth steps. The best one I think I've taken up until I just completed another four step, which is one of my most complete ones. But the best four step I ever did was when I was sober 7 or 8 years and I had kind of reached a wall in my sobriety. A man that I knew in the program once said, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. And what he meant was, if you wait to do it perfectly, you're going to have a long wait. And not each of us, because these steps are not mechanical. And that's what, if there is something missing in the teaching that we get into about the steps, we give the impression sometimes that there's one way to do it. And if you do it this way, this is the correct way. And that's something I don't think we hear as much in Alcoholics Anonymous. We give ourselves permission in the sponsor-sponsee relationship that I think we can say that to each other. You know, that I think what you're doing isn't as correct as this way might be. But you have to have permission in the relationship to be able to say that. You can't just stand up here, and it wouldn't be right for me to tell you exactly what I thought was correct or not correct. I could share my experience. I could give you my opinion. But I this right and wrong business is something that there wasn't much of early on in Alcoholics Anonymous. The steps are not mechanical. They're spiritual. Because they're spiritual and not, if they were mechanical, every time you had a problem, you just say the third step prayer and click your heels, you'd be back in Kansas. I mean, you literally wouldn't have any, but sometimes you say the third step prayer, no one's home. And there's plenty of times, and by the way, I have done a lot of step work dryly and not gotten much out of it. But I think doing that work was still helpful to me because I was doing something, trying to move myself in a direction towards the light, even though it might not have had such great... So because the process is spiritual, it is probably as important as to how we are in bringing ourselves to the process along with what we do. And so you have to bring a type of honesty, a type of open-mindedness, a type of humility, a type of openness to the process, I think, to get the full measure out of the process. Chamberlain one time was talking at the Peachford Conference. I might have the words wrong. A conference that Hunter had down here, and it was on with all the experts on alcoholism. And I was at a conference where they were talking about him going there, and he didn't do much that wasn't AA, and this technically wasn't AA. But I was kind of interested, and he went to the conference. And then I was at another convention where he was talking, and someone asked him how he liked that convention and what he thought of all the experts on alcoholism. And he looked over to whoever asked the question and said, they don't know much about surrender. And in a sentence, which he could do as masterfully as any person I have been exposed to, he put his, because that's what we would wish for each other. If I came to your house with a bushel basket full of alcoholism or a bushel basket full of unmanageability, one of the things you'd want for me is surrender. But because it's of God, you can't tell someone how to surrender. It's a spiritual event. You can bring the person up to the trough of water. You can have a conversation. And that's the miracle that we get to do in our 12-step work, is we get to have those wonderful conversations where something gets created in the conversation that is bigger than us. Words come out that are exactly the right words, some of which we have never said before in our lives. And something happens in front of us, which is astounding, which we did not make happen. It's like a magic. It's the power of God right in front of our eyes. And we get to witness that in small ways all the time. And it is extraordinary. So, I came in, took the first three steps, did my first four step. I don't remember a significant interaction with step six and seven in my first, when I was sober 4 months. I know I read them. I know we discussed them. I just don't recall them being as important as I'm going to talk about them being now. But I think I want you to hear that. I don't want you to repeat it. No, it's not my advice that would be a good way to do it. But I mean, keep in mind, I'm a 24-year-old kid. I'm newly sober. My container isn't very big. And I'm doing I'm not trying to do it. I'm trying to do it well. but that's the way I did it. I found myself, so in the first 5 or 6 years of our alcoholism, we're newly married, we're newly parents, we have two young boys. Linda said we still had alcoholism in our home. I was a jerk. I mean, I love my wife. I knew my job was to take care of my wife, but I was the overly active AA guy. Anytime the hand of AA reached out, I wanted to be there. I had money spending problems. I had gambling problems. I had work problems. I had trouble getting to work. I had trouble staying at work, and I had trouble working at work. I did. I mean, I did not learn how to work until I was 30 years old. And most people don't come in with that significant defect of character or hole in their being, but I was, I don't know if I was a spoiled kid. I jokingly say I've been born on third base and congratulate myself for hitting a triple. I had an intact family with two parents that educated 7 kids with college degrees. I went to private schools. If you couldn't make something out of where I started from, you know, you were dedicated to not, you know, do something. So I had a pretty good head start at every level all the way through. And I was scared. And if you wanted to know the story of my life up till that point, is I was scared to death and didn't know I was afraid. I was afraid of being a husband. I was afraid of being a father. I was afraid of work. I was afraid of success. I was afraid of failure. I was swimming in fear. And when I did my fear inventory, it was about snakes, dogs, and tall buildings. I had no... I'm telling you that I had... So I did not do the work in depth when I talked about going in there until I was... until just before and just after the third, fourth, and fifth step that I took. My experience was when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had this wonderful, joyous idea that I had found out what was wrong with me. I've been going to a psychiatrist for about 4 years. My parents thought I had a death wish. You know, I mean, cracked up automobiles. I've been shot at. I've been, you know, just all sorts of different things that had happened to me that people wouldn't have wanted to have happen. And... unexplainable. You know, the thing I love about AA is you don't have to explain it. You know, why did you park the car in the living room? We don't ask why. We just kind of don't, right? Because we know you don't have an explanation. And all the normal people ask why. So I had this wonderful thing that I had come across the explanation for why my life didn't work, for why I was a great starter and a poor finisher, for why I was a person with potential but never seemed to be able to put it into practice over any extended period of time. I found myself in the book. I found myself in the meetings. I found myself in the conversation with my sponsor. I loved everything about it, and I didn't want to miss anything. I had these other areas of unmanageability, and I found myself... So my sponsor was this crackerjack AA man who ended up being a delegate, and I later became a delegate. So everything I've been able to do in Alcoholics Anonymous... the privileges that I've had has been following my sponsor around, copying him. But I found myself at 4 and 5 years of sobriety with significant unmanageability in my life, working my butt off to try to get rid of it, and I couldn't. I'm a poor worker. I cleaned up our financial problems in the first year, and I was back in as much financial trouble at 7 years of sobriety as I was when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to say I didn't have marital problems, but Linda said, yes, you did. You just weren't aware of it. she she is this 21-year-old girl who came in that all of a sudden was spending her life around 50 and 60-year-old people. I am enthralled with these 50 and 60-year-old people, and she is not as enthralled. I think she liked great pieces of it, but her life was so different than she would have expected it to be as a young bride. We were seeing less of each other when we're married, because I'm spending all my time in AA. She's working as a nurse. She's getting up before I get up. She's going to bed before I go to bed. She's raising the kids significantly with my absence, and we're fighting about money and all the sorts of things that young couples have to work out in the process of their lives. And all of a sudden, at 6 or 7 years of sobriety, I'm saying, this is the same bloody thing that happens to me everywhere. Remember when you got out of high school and you were going to go away to Notre Dame? Remember how hopeful you were? Remember how, you know, this is going to be the new start that you wanted and everything is going to be really cool? And remember when you came in AA, how your expectations were, this is really going to be cool? And Tiger, you're back where you always are. You know, I mean, you're flunking out. I mean, take a look around the room. How many people do you think have the work problems you got? Do you know anybody else in the room that has the gambling issue you have? Oh, it's more of a hobby, 5 or 6 hours a day, 4 or 5 days a week. But I was making $8,000 to $10,000 a year gambling. And that was felt like a job. I mean, that's how screwed up. I thought I was going to do that. Almost tried to become a professional backgammon player. Wouldn't that have been wonderful for my family? And I'm telling you, I was in a tough place because it just felt, this is failing me. I'm failing it. I didn't know where else to go. And I felt like a failure. I didn't know I was exactly where I was supposed to be. You had gotten me honest enough that I couldn't avoid my problems. I used to deny them, rationalize them, but because of the conversations with my sponsor and because of the step work that I had done, they were not rationalizable or explainable. They were right in front of my nose. I couldn't go anyplace. And because I was going to 5 or 6 or 7 meetings a week with wonderful examples in Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew that what I needed to do had something to do with finding up what God had to do with Wednesday. The biggest problem I had was God was going to ask me to do, if I went to God and asked for help, that God was going to ask me to do a bunch of stuff I've been busting my ass trying to do for 6 or 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. What the hell do you think I've been trying to do? I would like to quit gambling. I would like to learn how to work. You know, and I'd like to clean those things up. And I really despaired because I thought you were supposed to know those things. I mean, I thought Alcoholics Anonymous would get you well and then you'd live your life. I mean, I thought recovery was the absence of problems. I don't know. I made that up, but I did. I thought if you're a good Christian, you didn't sin. I thought if you had good program, you didn't have problems. Now you got to be an idiot to be going to 6 or 7 meetings a week and think that people don't have problems. I mean, you must not be listening. But I think I tended to forgive everybody else and focus. And I was tougher on myself than I think I was on you or my sponsor or people I admired. People I admired, I wasn't very critical of. And I was in a pretty tough place. I wasn't thinking about drinking, but I was thinking about suicide. I was really tired of being what people called pretty well equipped and not being able to perform. It gets old. And not even put up a good act about performing. I mean, I think I did put up a good act. I don't think people really realize. Now, I'm telling my sponsor about 65% or 70% of what's going on in my life. And I know in Georgia you do 100%, and I think that's I think that's commendable. But we only see 65% of it. You don't see it when you go through it. Life is lived forward but understood backwards. You just don't get it as you're going through it. And so at about the eighth year, Linda's father, we were going to go to the International in Denver, and Linda's father became terminally ill, and Linda had to go home, and I had to watch the kids, and we didn't go. I was in the process of doing a fourth and fifth step, and when I was done with my, I went to my sponsor, and I took the first two fifth step with clergy, which was the way we all did it in our group. And I, this time I did it with my sponsor. When I was done, I said, I'm ready to do anything you recommend that I do. I said, I feel like I'm lying next to a lake dying of thirst. I said, I could tell you what to do. I just can't do it. I'm so bloody sick and tired of having the answer and not being able to behave. And so he sent me to a psychologist who worked with people in companies, businesses. Psychologist wanted my wife involved, which I did not want my wife involved. I knew the conversation would be different if Linda was in the room. See, it's always different when your wife's in the room. I mean, you know, maybe more honest. And then he wanted the kids in the room. And I was impatient, angry, immature, and sometimes violent with my children. And I didn't want the kids in the room. But we put them in the room. And what I discovered in the process with that psychologist was fear. And it changed. It opened up something very significant for me, and it allowed me to, in the process, I had a second surrender. I was in my living room pretty around the time, I don't know, it seemed like it was around the time my eighth anniversary. Had one of the worst days I had in AA, went to work late, left early, got in a backgammon game, I won $600, I missed dinner, I missed the AA meeting, got in a fight with Linda and slapped one of the kids. Great day. 8 years sober. One of those days you'd like to have your sponsor kind of just drop in unexpectedly. Or have it videotaped and sent to the General Service Office to show. And I said, gee, it happened again. I said, it happened again. Weren't you there? I said, yeah, I was there. But it's so habitual. It's like I don't even have to think about it. It's like I'm in a blackout. And all of a sudden, I realized that was a bunch of manure. My life was the way it was because I designed it that way. I sounded like I wanted to change, and I really didn't. I was conflicted. I had part of me that wanted to change. I had a significant part of me that kept it in place and was afraid to change. And that night, out of fear of getting drunk, but mostly out of fear of being a sober jerk, which I was with a capital J, I got down on my knees. I took the sixth and the seventh step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous at a depth that I had never taken them before. The sixth step said that we're entirely ready to have God remove our defects of character, not Bob. The seventh step said that we humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. And that night, five of the major issues of my life disappeared, such as the power of the program. Now, I'm a person who's made lots of promises and not been able to keep them, so I had to put a structure of support into that. God gave me, at that time, because of the surrender, I knew that if I was to rely only on myself, that I probably wouldn't be able to maintain the changes that I needed to do. So I went to my sponsor with my calendar. I made appointments about when I'd go to work and how long I'd stay at work. And we had some discussion about even working at work. I quit gambling that night. I started to date my wife every Friday night for the next 30 years. We found ourselves going out talking about kids and money and bills, which was not how we fell in love. And we had to reestablish a romantic. We had to start going to Chicago and check up for the weekend and doing the fun things that you do if you got a girlfriend and getting romance back in the picture. And that's maybe one of the best things we ever did. It was a real live, dangerous date. We never went out with anybody else. We got dressed up. We didn't go to a movie. We went out to this relatively cheap Mexican restaurant, and she had a couple of drinks, and we had a date. I spent thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours trying to learn how to be a better parent. I think having kids is like having a bowling alley installed in your head. I think it takes 125% of whatever you got. I think it's one of the most demanding processes but it's one of the great privileges of life. I think you become fully a man when you're married with children. I think there are that level of responsibility, the level of unavoidability, the level of sacrifice that you have to do is significant. And prior to that, I think we try to adapt our lives around our wishes. And when you have children and marriage, you can't as much, if you want it to work, you just can't have it adapted around your wishes. It just isn't a big enough picture. After those changes took place, there never has been a month in the last 35 years that I didn't make as much as I made in the year preceding that surrender. All of a sudden, the guy that didn't know how to work knew how to work. Now, there's a lot of luck involved in this, a lot of pleasure. So that's the capsule of my sad little story. But the purpose of that story is to bring us to a point that I think most of us end up in. I thought the process I was going through was a process of failure in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think in some ways it's a process that most of us go through. I don't think we can find all the things that we have to do in the first year or two of our sobriety. I think if people could have told us, if somehow people had this interior vision that they could take a look through us and give us a list of all the things we are eventually going to have to do, we wouldn't even be interested in a third or half of the list. We're interested in the immediate sort of thing. We make profound changes in the first year or two of our sobriety. I mean, it is so clear that the power of God is involved in that process. I mean, it is astounding what we do. But there are a lot of things that are going to need to be changed. I mean, and they usually involve the things that we absolutely have to change in order to maintain our sobriety and the significant parts of our lives, our marriages and maybe our jobs. But there are a second level of stuff that is not even on our screen. And that one by one gets handed to us over a period of time, and they are the things that are character defects that are substantially self-manifested in different ways that Ralph talked about today, that substantially interfere from our opportunity to have full, joyful, and prosperous lives. And that if we were going to have things like continuous marriage and good parenting and careers rather than jobs and the stability in our lives that we'd really like to have, we are going to have to deal with those issues. And most of us do not know what those issues are in the first year or two or three of our sobriety. The first 5 or 6 years of my sobriety, I tried to change and tried to change and I failed. Tried and failed, tried and failed, tried and failed, but I still grew. There comes a time when you either have to change or you stop growing. It's like an age of reason. It's like you know too much. And at that point in time, the road wise. You either take the road of getting more deeply into the steps and applying these principles in your lives in such a way to take on the second level of stuff, or you build an addition onto your house to accommodate the problem. People ask you how you are, you say you're fine because the problem's in the garage. Only comes out one day a month, takes over my life for about a week. Then it goes back in the garage, but right now I'm fine. At that point in time, if you take that road further on down, the gamblers start to hang out with the gamblers, the chasers hang out with the chasers, and you start making a deal. I won't call you on your crap, you don't call me on mine. Deal. We'll talk about the steps, the traditions, and the program. You stay out of my face, I'll stay out of yours. Deal? Not a good deal. Matter of fact, the deal we should have is the opposite of that. The deal we should have with our close compadres in AA is if you see my butt getting seriously out of line, I mean, I don't want you riding herd on me and taking my inventory, but if you really see me in some tall grass, I want you to grab me and have a cup of coffee with me and in a nice way tell me that you're very concerned about what I'm going through. That's the sort of brotherhood and sisterhood I think we need in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But the enigma of our situation is if the program works and it has the power to transform lives like Tom Ivester's and Ralph White's and Michael Earl's and Sandy Beach and Bob's, why in heaven's name doesn't it work on marriages and checkbooks and children and careers? I mean, why? If it has that kind of power, why wouldn't it just automatically extend? And Bill talks about the fact that maybe it's only the first step because of our instinctive desire to live, the first step that we take perfectly. We are so conditioned. In rereading some of the text, when Michael was talking about being concerned about being up here with all these big shots, all of us go through that at some level. I'm concerned about what Ivester's. Two of the worst AA talks I've given in my life have been in front of Ivester. No, but it is. Sometimes people who you really, really respect, you aren't able to be yourself as much as sometimes you'd like to be yourself, and you have to learn that lesson. You have to learn the lesson that you got to be able to give whatever talk you're supposed to give, whether whoever heck else is in the room. And I just lost where the hell I was. Man. But the enigma is if the program has that kind of power and God has that kind of power and I have taken the steps and these changes have happened in my life, why isn't it universal throughout my life? Why am I still struggling with the issues that I'm struggling with? And that was my problem. And it seemed to me, prima facie evidence, that the problems I had when I was 6 and 7 and 8 years sober were evidence that my program wasn't working. I think, with the hindsight of 42 years, that I can now look back on that and say that I was the person who expected perfection out of that young man. That if I were sponsoring someone who was 25 or 26 or 27-year-old today, would I be surprised that they had work issues? Would I be surprised that they had money issues? Would I be surprised that they had issues in their marriage? Would I be surprised that they had significant adjustments in learning how to be parents? I wouldn't be surprised at any of that. I was the one that expected me not to have those issues. I don't think Warren expected me not to have those issues. I expected it. But I do think that that is one of the great puzzles of the program, that it is so powerful that it literally relit the pilot light of our lives, of some men who were dead. And yet, we can't automatically apply it because it is the power of God. And we have to have and maintain a spiritual condition. To have and maintain a spiritual condition takes an attitude and work. The good news is I don't know where else you would go in life to have a more practical description about how to maintain a spiritual condition than we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just recently completed a four-step, like 2 weeks ago. Uh, in the last 15 years, we have been, 15 or 20 years, we've been doing this step workshops, and we've been using that little outline that Dr. Paul and Jerry J put together. And it's just a 16-week outline of going through the steps. And we get 10, 20, some of the guys get 70 people together, and we get them in a room. After the second week, you can't join the group. And we go through, and you lose some people around step four, and we take the steps going through and reading the book as we go. I found myself getting pretty dry of that process. I found myself, when I'm back in that process, that it seemed so familiar that I almost, you know, go dig out the last fourth step that I did. I reread the first 65 pages. I do retake step one, two, and three, but I don't think it's a huge exaggeration to say that the significant problems of my life today are because I'm powerless over certain parts of my life. I'm powerless over patterns of thought and conditioning in my life, old ideas. And I think the problem that they're in place, one of the pieces of work that I did, I'm running out of time. The fact is we're conflicted. We're afraid of change. If I asked you, jokingly, what I say sometimes in my AA talk, the next fourth step I want you to take, I don't want you to take but the book. I want you to get your brothers and sisters, your mom and dad, your ex-wife, the last two employers you had, two co-workers and two people you're close to in the AA group, and bring them over to your house. And here's what I want you to say. Say, we have a step in AA where we're trying to get in touch with our defects of character, and I'm having trouble identifying mine. And I wondered if you'd help. Very few of us would call that meeting, but you'd have a hell of a start on a fourth step, I promise you. And the reason I bring that up is that the problems in our lives are not new. The serious, ongoing issues of our lives are not months old or weeks old or years old. They're decades old. The issues that we're having with our spouses, the issues that we're having with our children, the issues that we're having at work. We train the people in our lives about what they can talk to us about and what they can't talk to us about. You tell your wife, we're not talking about that. You want to talk about that? Going to be a tough conversation, baby. The people in your sponsor knows what he can talk to you about, what you can't talk to you about. I mean, you just know ahead of time that you'd like to have a certain conversation, and you can't have the conversation because no one's home in that conversation. And what Ralph's talking about, how's it working? It's not working. But we're so scared to change, we'd give up a marriage rather than risk changing it. Because this devil I know, I don't know the other devil. And what we're giving up in that process is who we really are. The process of finding God is a process of coming home. It is not a process of going someplace else. It is not a process of becoming someone else. It is a process of removal, not addition. The process of the steps is the removal of what is in our way to develop the spiritual conditioning and develop the relationship with the God of our understanding. And where you get brought to that is where Ivester is brought. It's so clear that 25-year-old horse's ass that was stuck in a prison in Michigan, you can't get to where he started to where he is today. That is not like an improvement. It is more like a sex change operation. But it isn't. I mean, it is so big. You cannot explain it. And that's the part, you know, we always, of the talkers in AA, there's always a half a dozen whose stories are just so big that you just can't ignore the power. And yet we sit in chairs with our chicken crap living issues, which would not measure up to the sorts of horsepower that we see exhibited in AA, and we despair of dealing with them. Now, it takes a certain kind of courage to keep growing. And lots of us, we end up using our recovery as cover for keeping our problems. We end up saying, why the hell should I have to? I got 42 years of sobriety. You want to match that? You know, so I can keep a couple of problems. I mean, I'm not perfect. You know, so there's stuff in my life I don't have to deal with because I got some seniority. Give me a break. Okay, but you think that doesn't happen? I mean, you know, there are a guy with 3 years of sobriety that you'd go up and say, hey, I'm worried about you. But when you see Herb that's got 28 years of sobriety doing the same bloody thing, you don't go to Herb. Because, you know, you just feel like you're, you know, you can't quite do it. And the biggest issue in our programs, in our lives, is what, you know, tonight we're going to talk about what would you wish for someone, and I don't know exactly what I'm going to wish for, but one of the things I would wish for is I would wish for us not to be self-directed. But there's only two choices. And Chuck is talking, you can either have a God-centered life and suffer the consequences, or you can have a self-centered life and suffer the consequences. Now, if you have a self-centered life, your ego and intellect are running your life. You've got a 16-year-old mentally ill child, a materialist with no spiritual grounding, running your life in opposition to everything that's going on around them. Trying to be right, make others wrong. Try to dominate and avoid domination. Try to avoid pain. Trying to get what you want and avoid losing what you have. That's the whole game. Now you put God in that. It's just like whatever rules were in that previous game are like gone. So when you get a couple over your house and they're nose to nose tearing each other apart, you just almost can't have a conversation with them that makes any sense, because it's just like the woman's telling your wife one story, the guy's telling you another story, and you can't put the... It's crazy. But you put God in that, and the story doesn't matter anymore. It just doesn't matter. It only matters how you're treating each other. Take care of each other. Love each other. I'm not sure she's the right one. Make her the right one. Decide. Well, if I decide, that sounds kind of permanent. It's supposed to be. You don't know. It is amazing how I think when you read the book how much they talk about the importance of the decision in step three. How that seems like a much more important action than we hold it to be today in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I would say that the problem that I have in my life, I've got three or four significant living issues that I have worked out and off and on with. I just made a business decision that I lost $3 million. I'm 66 years old. And I made a business decision. I lost $3 million in Florida out of ego. It was the wrong thing, the wrong partner, the wrong management, the wrong idea. My son did not want me to do it. I wanted to do it. I mean, the things that were wrong with it and the things, I mean, just everywhere. Old and dumb is a horrible combination. If you could change one of the variables, it would be a lot smarter. Okay. And it isn't fun explaining that when you've lost, you know, the timing of that, when you're getting ready to retire, the timing of that just sucks. And, you know, so I've had that up in front of my nose pretty strong. And that's the second or third major experience of that. I could give you four or five other examples that I really need to learn the difference between investing and plunging. There's a difference. And greed and ego and impulsivity, not enough advice is a bad combination when you're making significant business decisions. And that's the fifth or sixth time I've done that. That's a pattern, if you would know me. Now, the good news is I made other decisions that are not all that way. But, you know, this was an ignorable one. We have to have the courage ongoingly to be able to inventory our lives and be up for and have the discussion to be able to communicate our lives, to inventory it in the fourth step, communicate it in the fifth step, and bring ourselves to an opening that we are willing to have God restore our lives through the process of removing our defects of character. We first have to tell the truth. We have to name it. That's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. When you raise your hand and say, "Hi, I'm Bill, I'm an alcoholic," you named it. Not a small thing. Once you name it, you start to see it. When you see it, you start to raise it in your consciousness. When you raise it in your consciousness, you can start to direct your attention and intention towards it, and you can start to have some management of it. And once you see it, you can start to ask for the grace of God to enter into that arena and expel it. When the book talks about coming into the fifth step, it talks about now these problems are going to be removed, expelled. I want to read to you, because I think most of us kind of think that in a meeting like this that we are going to, I may be getting into Tom's action a little bit, but I think sometimes we feel like if I could just get the right way to do it, I'd be home. Well, it's more important that your heart is right than the information is right. The book has the information. We have a pretty well-worn path through the step work. You get yourself a sponsor and you go, you're not going to go very far afield. You don't have to do it perfectly. You can come back and add to and correct. But I want to read to you my favorite paragraph of the big book and close with that. Lee, am I about an hour? On page 84, it says, "And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol." Sometimes I add sex or gambling or something when I'm talking to a guy. I said, "But this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we will recoil at it from a hot flame. We will react sanely and normally. We find that this has happened automatically." Does that sound like I'm doing it? "We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us. Without any thought or effort on our part, it just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're neither fighting nor are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though that we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed." Now, I say in some ways we prepare ourselves differently to be a channel for the grace and power of God than we would prepare ourselves to be smart enough to be able to do it ourselves. And I think that there's a temptation that because of all the information we have about the steps in the program that many of us are sitting in our chairs thinking that we're supposed to know how to do it and do it ourselves. And we are unintentionally 10, 15, and 20-year members of Alcoholics Anonymous being self-directed because we are not in touch with the powerlessness and the unmanageability in our lives. And we have not... named the issues in our lives significantly enough. We have them at the level of complaint, not at the level of business. We are in a liquid vat of manure right up to our noses with our sponsor saying, "Can I help you out?" And you say, no, I'm okay. Just get that guy over there to stop making waves. I'm a... So as we go through, and I think I see many times people are going back to the, you know, when their lives are, when they reach a point where they really have to do a new piece of work, they go back to step four for information. We're not missing any information. The place that I have found that I have to bring myself back to is step one. The physical part of my disease is gone. The mental and spiritual aspect, I think, is alive today, and many of the behavior patterns in my life exhibit the same behavior patterns that my alcoholism exhibited when I was drinking actively. I have the same denial. I have the same blank spots. I have those quirks of mind. I make decisions. I find myself in the bakery getting $6 worth of bakery goods because I need the protein. And I, So if I have a message, my message is joyfully that the program is every bit as workable and every bit as powerful, and God can transform any arena of our lives. We have that evidence around us all the time. The problem we have is that we are afraid to change. The problem we have is that we think because we are sober and our lives are somewhat more in order than they have been before, that we do not feel the unmanageability or the lack of spiritual growth that we did when we were at the peak of our alcoholism. But we are giving up who we really need to be in the manner of our own lives. I think we are more afraid of how wonderful we could be than we are afraid of how bad we are. In meetings, we often talk about, I'm afraid if you really saw who I was, you wouldn't like me. I think we are more afraid of how wonderful we could be if we would open ourselves up to who we really are. God bless you and thank you.